searching for something. Something never comes, never leads to nothing. Nothing satisfies, but I'm getting close. Closer to the prize at the end of the rope. All night long, I dream of the day. When it comes around and it's taken away, leaves me with the feeling that I feel the most. Feel it come to life when I see your ghost. Then I'm done, done, on to the next one, done.
Welcome to Sports City with Jay Smith here on radio.dominican.edu. And I would like to say, first off, a thank you to all my listeners. That's first and foremost, thank you to all my listeners, as this is the last episode, last show of Sports City for this semester, until next semester. There will be new Sports Cities next semester, I can guarantee that. But for this semester, we're going to have a whole summer break of no Sports City, as sad as that is to hear for some people. I know that it's a sad day, but it's going to happen, and I'm sorry about it, but this is the last Sports City of the semester. And I'm actually going to talk about a little bit about what I'm going to do today. It's called Sports City, but today I'm going to mix it up a little bit. Since the Outside Lands lineup came out last week, and Outside Lands, if anybody doesn't know, is a music festival every year in August in San Francisco. Huge bands come out every single year. Just a few of the bands this year are... Actually, I'm just going to name all of the ones that I like. Metallica, Stevie Wonder, Neil Young, Jack White, The Foo Fighters, Beck, Dispatch, Passion Pit, Big Boy, Franz Ferdinand, Revolution. That's already. What else do you need? And that's about a quarter to a fifth of the amount of bands that are actually playing in the three-day festival. It's August 10th through 12th, and those are the bands that are coming out. And in honor of Outside Lands, I'm actually going to focus a little bit about music today and play a little bit more music than usual. And actually, on that note, here comes Death Letter by the White Stripes, since Jack White is playing. Unfortunately, it's not the White Stripes, one of my absolute favorite bands ever, but Jack White, in my opinion, even by himself, is one of the top 10 guitarists of all time, and seeing him live, I could only dream. Death Letter by the White Stripes.
Bye. the break of day, just hugging the pillows where she used to lay. Got up this morning, believe the break of day. Just hugging the pillows where my baby used to lay.
Good old White Stripes. And now on to the important stuff. That was White Stripes, that was Foo Fighters, but it is called Sports City, so let's get down to the grind of the show, and that is the sports. And we're actually going to start today, not Kings Corner, not Giants, but overall NBA, something I love. I mean, NBA is just my baby. That's just what I love. And there's a lot going on in basketball right now. The big thing that happened recently is good ol' Meta World Peace. He has done it again. He, in the Lakers-Thunder game a couple days ago, which was a very, very exciting game, which I'll get to later, early in the game, Meta World Peace was celebrating a basket and inadvertently, so he says, elbowed James Harden straight in the face with authority, too. This, it hurt. It really, really hurt. Looking at it, after everybody was looking at it, and especially in my opinion, it was not inadvertent. That was absolutely intentional. I have been on the Meta World Peace bandwagon since he got to the Kings. He was a great king. I think he was a great king. He led us to the playoffs, but this is not... Oh, look at good old Ron Artest. Oh, look at good old World Peace at his shenanigans again. This was violent and very unnecessary. And I was going to say, actually, before the show, that he should be suspended about 5 games, I think, which would go into their playoffs, actually. The Lakers have about 3 games left. They only have 1 game left. The Lakers only have 1 game left, which means a 5-game suspension would miss 4 games in the playoffs. Just came out, Meta World Peace is out 7 games, which basically means he's out that first round. That's 6 games in the first round where the Lakers are probably going to be playing the Grizzlies. And against the Grizzlies, against Rudy Gay, how can you do that? World Peace is supposed to guard Rudy Gay, one of the better athletes in the game, and just a pure scorer, and World Peace, that's his job as a Laker. His job is to spot up on offense and pass the ball to Kobe and lock down the other team's best player so Kobe doesn't have to work. Again, with the Lakers, it's Kobe, but that's how it goes. They are the third seed, so obviously it works. Meta World Peace's 7-game suspension, I would say, is almost fair because it was absolutely blatant. I could almost see in his eyes, he's looking at Harden. You know what? I'm going to do this, but I'm going to try to not do it on purpose. And he maybe wanted to send a message to the Thunder saying, you guys aren't on top yet. The veterans are still here waiting for you. But that's just the wrong message, because now you're out in the first round against the team that nobody, Eastern, Western, nobody wants to play in the playoffs, and that's the Memphis Grizzlies. Oh, you know what, listeners? I'm sorry. Mistake. They're probably not going to play the Grizzlies in the first round unless they lose their last game and the Clippers win their last 2 games. The Lakers right now will be playing the Nuggets, but that I will get to a little bit later. In that Lakers-Thunder game, it's a very important game, especially this close to playoffs. You see how people are really playing, those elite teams, these title contenders, see how they're really playing, and especially in the Western Conference, because the Western Conference is so unbelievably deep. Kevin Durant had a possession or two where he tried to do a step-back three in either overtime or double overtime at the end of regulation. It went short, and he had another, as everybody likes to call it now, hero ball possession, where he came up short. Then you watched Russell Westbrook go to work, and it was so ugly, but the dude got to the line or got layups basically every single time during the clutch, during that clutch time. And even looking it up, you think, oh no, Kevin Durant, he's so clutch. I've seen him make so many buzzer beating threes. And Russell Westbrook had last year's playoff meltdown. Nobody could trust him. You look at the stats. Number one, Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, both of them are both in the top four of clutch scores as far as straight points counts. Only Kyrie Irving at the top. Unbelievable what he's doing in his rookie year. And Carmelo Anthony, as everybody's seen recently, are at the top with Durant and Westbrook. However, while they may score about the same amount of points, Durant has a few more per, you know, efficiency-wise, he has a few more points. But Westbrook shoots it 9% better from the field. Kevin Durant is only shooting 41% during clutch time. And Russell Westbrook, as unclutch as he's supposed to be, is shooting 49-50%. And that goes against everything everybody thought. But then you watched that Lakers game and it kind of got in my head. You know what? Russell Westbrook, that athletic freak that he is, he can get to the line anytime he wants. Just like the Kings, during Tyreek's rookie year, everybody thought, oh, he can get to the line, get to the rim every time he wants. Russell Westbrook is like Tyreek Evans times five and better. Russell Westbrook almost needs the ball. You know, he has had another year to mature. He was only in the 2008 draft. That's not a long time ago. He's still very, very young. So is Durant. And they keep maturing. And that's why I keep thinking that the Thunder can't lose this championship. However, the Lakers did beat them. And that just kind of goes to show that the West and even these playoffs are really wide open. Because we are in the middle, the NBA is in the middle of a giant, giant talent boom. Basically, the drafts from about 2003 to 2008 were, or even 2009, were absolutely top caliber. And right now, there's so much young talent. Plus, we have the veterans, you know, the 96 to 99 drafts, the Kobes, the Duncans, the Garnets, even the Nashes. They're still in there. And there's so much talent in the NBA. I love it. I absolutely love it. Now, the playoffs are coming up. Like I said, Lakers only have one more game. Kings, two more games. All these teams have about one, two, or three more games left. And so the playoffs are coming up. So I'm going to start going over. And since this is my last show, unfortunately, on Sports City, I'm going to go over, even though the playoffs aren't here yet and seeds could change, I'm going to go ahead and go over a little bit of previews for these playoff matchups, especially the interesting ones, including the 2 versus the 7 in the Western Conference, which most likely will be the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Dallas Mavericks. Dallas Mavericks this year have just looked awful. Absolutely awful. I saw them in person, and they looked their worst. They lost to a Kings team by something like 20 points, and they just looked bad. Jason Kidd is officially over the hill 3 years ago. The guy is so old now, and he's past being past his prime. That's how old he is, and that's how old he looks playing basketball. You see Steve Nash, and he looks old, but he doesn't play old. He's getting his team almost to the playoffs. He's getting his team one game away from the playoffs, even though that Phoenix team is god awful. But those Mavs also beat the Thunder in last year's playoffs in the Western Conference Finals. Now, this is supposed to be a worse Mavericks team and a better Thunder team, but the Mavs know, no, they kind of still have that mentality of, you guys are still the young guns and we're still the vets. We're still going to show you how it's done. And we're still going to show you that Dirk Nowitzki is one of the best players to ever live. And they're going to show that. Dirk is going to show that. Rick Carlisle is such a great coach. He's going to do something good in this series, do something well in this series. Other matchups include the Clippers and the Grizzlies in the first round. I am going to go ahead and say that probably about 75 to 85% of people, of experts, you know, ESPN, Sports Illustrated experts, will pick the underdog Grizzlies in this series. Even though they're going to be the 5 seed, most likely, and won't have home court advantage. I completely disagree with that. Everybody saw what Chris Paul did in last year's playoffs against the Lakers. Everybody saw him absolutely take over games. Just take them over, and he single-handedly won 2 games against the Lakers last year. The defending champion Lakers, nonetheless. And this Memphis team, who has yet to get past the second round, I think, ever. The Grizzlies franchise has never gotten past the second round. How are they going to just so easily beat the Clippers? The Clippers have DeAndre Jordan, a good post defender. The Clippers have Blake Griffin, a big body. They could match up well with the Grizzlies. The Grizzlies can't just overpower everyone. Those are two of the top players on the Clippers right there, their front court. Plus, Mike Conley, while he's okay and he's, you know, decent, he can't guard Chris Paul. So you think, oh, we'll just put Tony Allen on Chris Paul and completely shut him out? But that means one of the wing defenders, Chris Paul, is just going to find those wing shooters like Caron Butler and the rest of the Clippers so easily, because that's what Chris Paul does. So that series is not going to be nearly as easy as what people expect. Nearly as easy. Now, that's the Western Conference. And back to the Eastern Conference we go, and there are a lot of good matchups in the East, especially in the second round. The second round of the Eastern Conference for about the past 2-3 years has been just stellar. Basically, since the Celtics got good, the second round of the East has featured Dwight Howard and the Magic, most likely, the Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, Rondo, Allen, Celtics, the Derrick Rose Bulls, and then the LeBron James Heat. Those four right there, just right there, should be in the top four every single year. Now this year, Orlando kind of took a step back. Injuries, being a bad team, you know, that kind of affects you when you're a bad team. And especially with Dwight Howard out, they're looking almost sorry. They're 4-6 in their last 10 games when they're supposed to be fighting for a playoff spot. They almost dropped down to the 6th seed, they did drop down to the 6th seed. They almost dropped down to the 7th seed and would have had to play the Heat, you know, a star top-tier team, but they didn't tank too bad. But the second round of the playoffs most likely will have the Chicago Bulls and the Boston Celtics. And that is going to be a series unlike no other. It's going to be just like that 2009 first round between the Celtics and the Bulls when Derrick Rose was a rookie. They were a 6th seed. And it went to 7 games, something like 8 total overtimes. Just unbelievable numbers. Ridiculous clutch performances. Ray Allen's 52-point game. Derrick Rose's 36 points, triple-double in his first playoff game ever. Unbelievable performances. I'm predicting that's that exact same thing is going to happen, except probably even better. You have a new leader on the Celtics in Rajon Rondo. You have a very uplifted Kevin Garnett out of nowhere. January. You go back to January, and he is averaging 12 points, 8 rebounds. He's not the same guy on defense. And then all of a sudden, February, March comes around. turns it up and says, yeah, I still have it. I'm still the MVP, the champion that I really am, and I'm going to bring it every single night from now on. And then he brought it. That's the thing. He absolutely brought it, and he brought it hard, too. And not just on offense, but the usual KG defense that every Celtics fan has been longing to see. And you watch some of his games against someone like the Heat, who can run a Mario Chalmers, LeBron James pick and roll, a Dwayne Wade, LeBron James pick and roll. Either way, either one can be the ball handler. That's so dangerous when either one can be the ball handler. And if Kevin Garnett is out there, he's circling everywhere. He's so aggressive on his blocks as a pick and roll defender. And just watching him defend the pick and roll, you know, the bread and butter play of every single team in the league, it's just fascinating to watch, actually. And it's pretty uplifting to see Kevin Garnett have this career resurgence. You know, every team may hate him other than the team he's on just because of his antics, his fire, as he likes to put it, but he's also kind of whiny, and a lot of the other teams see that. But as a great, it's good to see him get a resurgence. When we come back, have a little Giants talk, as always. And as always, there's so much Giants talk to be had on radio.dominican.edu. This is Sports City with Jay Smith.
Trash to the garbage around you. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Sports City with Jay Smith on radio.dominican.edu again. And this is my last show of the semester. Sorry. It's a shame, but it has to happen. Now, music-wise, let's talk a little music. That last song, Ordinary Girl by Revolution. Now, Revolution is performing at Outside Lands, like all of the performers that I'm playing are. All of the songs that I'm playing today are performing at Outside Lands. And Revolution, along with Iration and Pepper and bands like Slightly Stupid, I'd never even heard. I've heard of Slightly Stupid before, and I've had a song of theirs, but other than that, I'd never heard of any of those bands until I came to college. And all of the sudden, you get to college, and it's that and dubstep. And that is basically the only thing I heard for three straight months was, you know, SoCal reggae type stuff and dubstep. And I am both surprised, ashamed, and maybe even a little excited that they're both kind of growing on me. There's a time and place for dubstep, I think. You know, my musical roots say that it's disgusting and that it is not, you know, real music, but there is a time and place for dubstep, and I occasionally enjoy it. And with those reggae bands, those are good bands. That's good music. I do not like UB40. That's a terrible band. I love Bob Marley, but I've almost played him out on my own. And so a nice little refreshing touch like Revolution and Iration, it's nice. And, you know, getting into Slightly Stupid, if anybody has any doubts about Slightly Stupid, get into them right now. They're very, very good. And Revolution and Iration are the same way. They may sound the same, but they're actual good songs. And I also played Beck, E-Pro by Beck. And I'm just guessing Beck is probably one of the best live performers out there. He seems like a guy who doesn't give a care in the world. He just goes out and performs to his little heart's content. And the other thing is, he's really, really, really good at guitar. Just that riff in E-Pro, that beginning riff, is so good. The ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-da-da. It's so catchy, but it still rocks hard. You kind of forget that riff rocks pretty dang hard because it's so unbelievably catchy. Just like another band, Metallica, performing at Outside Lands. A lot of people said that when Enter Sandman came out in 1991, by the way, 1991 is the greatest year in music ever, but anyways, in 91, when Enter Sandman came out by Metallica, everybody thought, oh, they sold out. It's too poppy. It's too catchy. You know what? It was catchy, and it still rocked pretty dang hard. Like, really, really hard. That song is just as good as a lot of their other ones. Most of their other ones, I would even say. I'm not huge on Metallica, but I still like them, and I still appreciate what they did for music, and am able to, you know, kind of recognize what they did. What they did is huge. And Enter Sandman, everybody thought they were done. They were done, you know, they were donezos. But Metallica still rocks pretty, pretty hard. And one more band that I haven't talked about, and that's the first band that I played here, and that's the Foo Fighters on this show. Played All My Life by the Foo Fighters. And the Foo Fighters really are one of my favorite bands of all time. They're top 10, I would say. And everybody kind of thinks, oh, Foo Fighters are good, but Nickelback isn't. And when I look at it, I think it's kind of the same, almost the same concepts. They're supposed to be rocking. Nickelback just goes a little more country and a little more, you know, awfulness. But the Foo Fighters just don't care as much. It seems like they simply just don't care as much as those other modern rock bands that don't really sound like rock. They just sound like, you know, concocted sounds that are supposed to be rock, while the Foo Fighters sound like real, real rock. You know, a reason for that could be that they have the drummer from Nirvana, one of the best bands ever, in their band as their lead guy, Dave Grohl, who is just a fantastic musician. The drummer for Nirvana and the guitarist, songwriter, and singer for another wildly successful band. Who does that? Nobody does that. That just doesn't happen. But nope, Dave Grohl said it happens. And the Foo Fighters, I have a little story with, it seems like, every band that I like. And my Foo Fighter story is one of my favorites, actually. During the summer of 2010, I had some events happen and, you know, was just kind of, it was a fun summer. It was a crazy summer. And I connected Everlong, the song, to all of that summer and then wrote a college essay about it. And that was my college essay. And it actually turned out a lot better. Me as the sports person, I was thinking, oh, I'll just write a sports essay. It'll be easy. You know, how has sports affected my life? That's easy. I can write that in 2 seconds. I wrote it. It wasn't good at all. It was actually pretty bad. I write about music. Who knew? It was really, really good. Maybe I should do that more often. And that's it for that music right now. But again, Outside Lands, August 10th through 12th. I'm going to keep talking about it because it's going to keep being in my mind as just such an exciting performance. Now, with the Giants. It's time for a little Giants. Yesterday was a doubleheader against the New York Mets, both games in New York. Both games probably had about 2,000 people watch them live, too, which was just a sad, sad appearance by Mets fans. The Giants won the World Series 2 years ago. They're a fairly marquee team. They have star players. They have Tim Lincecum. You know, people would think to go to a Tim Lincecum, a two-time Cy Young Award winner, start. But I saw maybe, I would say, a tenth or a 15th of the stands filled. It was almost disgusting to see a stadium that empty for a real live baseball game. It wasn't good. But onto the game that Tim Lincecum actually pitched. And he pitched okay. It was much, much better than the last three times he's pitched. But still, it was bad Tim Lincecum. Giants fans have very high expectations for their starters because that's the only way that the Giants are going to win is if their starters perform much better than their opponent, which in the last 2-3 years has kind of happened. It's just that we haven't had an offense to support them. Now it's kind of looking like we have a little bit of an offense, and then Tim Lincecum starts to go downhill, and we're back at square one again. But with Timmy's start yesterday, as I'm sure everyone has said, it was a very Jonathan Sanchez start. It was 5 innings, only 1 earned run, but 5 walks and multiple hits. It was not a clean start. And the only way Tim Lincecum actually got out of three plus runs really, that were all going to be earned, is in the 5th inning, Manny Burris now makes an amazing glove flip to Brandon Crawford, who decides to, you know, I'll just catch this with my bare hand, barely get a grip on it, and fire enough power to Brandon Belt first for the inning-ending double play with the bases loaded. It was, I believe, number 4 on SportsCenter. In my mind, it was number 1. That's what I say. I say it was number 1 because it was almost game-saving. We won that game by multiple runs, but the momentum could have completely changed there. Relievers start to come in. There would have still been only one out if Burris didn't make that play. That's a lot of what-ifs that would have happened if Burris and Crawford don't make that amazing play. And it's so good to see good defense in those positions. Manny Burris is okay, but he's been making plays that have kind of been turning me around to say, you know what? He may be better than okay at defense, at least. He may be decent at defense. And Crawford, everybody knows, Crawford can, in my mind, do no wrong in defense. He's had a few errors this season, but he also has such range at the shortstop position that it almost makes up for it. It really does. And that was Tim Lincecum's start. And that was good to see him at least get one earned run. But the best part of the day, other than obviously two wins, a sweep of a doubleheader, and a fourth series win in a row after that awful Diamondbacks opener. Again, four series wins in a row. We're already back from last place to second place of the behind the Dodgers, who I am guaranteeing will regress. Absolutely guarantee that the Dodgers cannot keep this up, both out of hope and a prayer that they can't keep it up because they're the Dodgers, and out of just looking at their roster, they can't possibly keep this up. Matt Kemp can't be the greatest baseball player to ever live. He's not Babe Ruth. He will go back to being good Matt Kemp, but he's no Babe Ruth. He's no Willie Mays. Now, that was the Dodgers, and that was, and it was so good to see our two wins yesterday, but we won because of both pitching and all of a sudden this offense. Where did this offense come from? Is Melky Cabrera actually this good? Is Nate Sherholt, has Nate Sherholt finally found his little niche? Has he finally found that comfort zone that's going to keep him in the lineup? Nate Sherholt has had so many of these little runs. He goes 2 weeks, 3 weeks, even 5-6 weeks. Just goes on a tear, rips the ball, gets a couple splash hits. He, you know, hits doubles all the time. Even takes walks sometimes. But then he'll get injured. But then he'll have 3 0-for-4s in a row. And then he just kind of regresses. And then he starts to do a little worse on defense. And it's almost as if, it seems like slumps are usually mental things. Everybody goes through slumps. But Nate Sherholtz, I bring up the point that Nate Sherholtz is almost like Brandon Belt, but we never saw it coming. Never saw it coming. Everybody's seeing right now how Bruce Bochy, Brian Sabian, the Giants organization really, are kind of jerking Brandon Belt back and forth between starting on the bench. Is he on the bench or is he going down to Fresno in AAA? And even the Belt haters can say that he has been jerked around in a way that no prospect should be. But you know what? Nate Sherholtz kind of had that same thing. He went back and forth between Fresno and San Francisco. He went back and forth between the bench and starting. And he was always that fourth outfielder that came in when some injury happened or some giant slump happened. But then he'd do really well. And then he'd do really bad. And then he'd do really well again. But you never know, what if he got that consistent playing time? What if you got him through that slump, and then he kept raking every single game? These are the what-ifs that Giants fans love to wonder about. And another what-if is that, what if Brandon Crawford wasn't getting absolutely gypped out of a hit every single game? I talk about batting average with balls in play a lot on this show, because it's a stat that shows luck. And it's not complete and utter luck, but it is pretty close to it. Buster Posey this year has a .450 batting average with balls in play. That means almost half of the time he puts contact on the ball and it goes fair, he got a hit. Brandon Crawford, on the other hand, .224 batting average with balls in play. And it's not, oh, well, Posey's good. He's supposed to have high numbers. No, even good players have low numbers. This is the average for balls in play is completely based on chance. And Crawford right now, as bad as people might think he is, and people can look at his .200 batting average, or he has something like a .45 OPS plus when 100 is average. You get that average to what an average batting average with balls in play is at about .320, .330. He might actually be a decent hitter. And the thing is with Brandon Crawford, you can have all the stats you want, and you can have all of the metrics and the sabermetrics and everything, but you can also just look at him, and looking at him, he looks like he can swing the bat. It may be the old school scout method of scouting someone, but the dude looks like he can swing a good bat. And that's, personally, I can go on that and say Crawford will possibly, again, possibly, he is still Brandon Crawford, but he can possibly be the Giants' starting shortstop for a long time, a really long time. Remember, he's still young. And another person who is young is good old Kung Fu Panda, Pablo Sandoval, the beloved Kung Fu Panda. He just tied Willie Mays' record for a 16-game hit streak that to start the season. And I'm not going to talk about the hit streak, as good as that is. He's had, I mean, Pablo's had better, Mays has had better, blah, blah, blah. It's cool to start the season that way, but it's a random stat. But every time you look at these random stats, it's you keep looking and saying, oh, Pablo Sandoval just broke Willie Mays' record. Oh, Pablo Sandoval just broke Willie McCovey's record. Oh, Pablo Sandoval is about to tie this record. It's kind of record after record after record. And you begin to think, what if Pablo Sandoval is one of the greatest Giants hitters ever? I'm already ready to go there because that's how much I love Pablo Sandoval. I think that I say this all the time, but he gets so underappreciated just because he wasn't really part of that 2010 team. That was his slump year. He was the only offensive player in 2009. He was the only offensive player in 2011. And right now, he has a supporting cast. And that's why the Giants are doing so well, is because Panda finally has a supporting cast. And that's just so, so amazing to see from the Giants, that maybe Brian Sabing went out and got hitters and got okay hitters. Because all this offense needs is to be average with our pitching. They just need to be average, just like in 2010. We had exactly a league average offense, won the World Series with it. Go figure. That's what pitching can do for you. And another guy who's pitching on the Giants is Clay Hensley. And Clay Hensley pitching, you'd think, okay, he's still young. He's, you know, I have never heard the name Clay Hensley. He came out of nowhere. How would he affect the Giants? Just watch his two-seam fastball. That thing is absolutely nasty. Just so filthy. Just a filthy, filthy fastball. And when you're a reliever, that's all you need. Look at Mariano Rivera. Has lived with one pitch. His cutter goes the same speed, puts it in the same spot every single time. Works for him. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. Clay Hensley just needs to throw that two-seamer. And two-seamer is a pitch that his two-seamer goes about 92, 93, except it has movement that moves all the way from the outside of the plate on righties to the inside of the plate. And it could go from the inside of the plate where the hitter is about to swing all the way into his hands and on to that grip of the bat. And that's just broken bat central right there. And that's the absolute best thing that a pitcher loves to hear, that is that broken bat, because they know that hitter just got absolutely fooled. Absolutely fooled. Now, we're going to be back on Sports City with Jay Smith, actually for the last time. This is our last commercial break this semester. It's a sad, sad day. And we'll leave it with Sleepyhead by Passion Pit.
And everything is going to be.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Sports City with Jay Smith, and it's not a welcome back for long, as this is my send-off for the semester. Last show, last minute of Sports City with Jay Smith here on radio.dominican.edu. like, again, thank all of my fans, all the listeners out there, everybody who contributed to the show, all the guests, all everything. Just, you know, thank you for a good semester of radio. It's been just oh so much fun on Sports City. And I will see you next semester here on radio.dominican.edu.
She woke me up with a bang bang, looking over cross-eyed. Had a big hunch that the world was a big lie. When I got up, all the blood to my head, I got so dizzy, fell back into my bed. I went over to the wayside, looking for the high tide. What will I find, will I find, will I find, find? All I saw was a man that had a hat, that had a pom-pom. He's been there for years, can someone tell me how long? Wake up to tell me,